This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Brother.
Coming up, I'll tell you why Patrick Mahomes might not be the hottest quarterback in his own division.
And I'll tell you the real reason why the Steelers lost to the Broncos yesterday. But we start every day with a Whitlock. What you got today, big dog?
Aaron Rodgers can't save the Packers. Not this time. In 2014, after a 1-2 start, Rodgers told Packers fans to relax. They finished the season 12-4 and lost in overtime in the NFC Championship. In 2016, after a 4-6 start, Rodgers predicted the Packers would run the table. They did, and lost to the Falcons in the NFC Championship. After last night's 24-17 loss to Minnesota, the Packers are 4-6-1, but Rodgers sounds somewhat confident they can win their remaining five games and sneak into the postseason.
So we just got to go back home, get some rest, beat Arizona, and then come back and beat Atlanta and go to Chicago, a place we've won a number of times, beat them, go to New York around Christmas, beat them, and come home against Detroit, beat them, get a little help.
Sounds doable, doesn't it? Cardinals, Falcons, Jets, and Lions. There's only 13 victories among those four teams. And hey, the Packers have already beaten the 8-3 Bears this season. Here's the problem with Rodgers saving the Packers. He has to save himself first. He's part of the problem. Firing head coach Mike McCarthy midseason won't fix anything. Aaron Rodgers isn't right mentally or physically. He's missing throws. He ranks 28th in the league in completion percentage. He's also no longer a real threat with his legs. He hasn't had a rushing touchdown since Christmas Eve 2016. Hate to go here, but let's be honest. The drama within his family has to be a distraction, too. During Thanksgiving week, his brother Jordan took a devastating public shot at him when he called Aaron out for not checking on his mother during the California fires. Jordan called his brother a phony and legitimized all the rumors about Aaron's aloof and weird personality. Aaron Rodgers isn't a leader. He's an amazing talent. He's Wilt Chamberlain. You marvel at their gifts, but you wonder if those same gifts undermine their greatness. All that talent can make you socially awkward. It can convince you that other people aren't instrumental in your overall success. Who would you rather be, Superman or Batman? Clark Kent has it all. He has every superpower. He's a one-man army. But he's not that interesting or compelling. Beating Superman is relatively easy. Just find some kryptonite, and Superman is just a nerdy dude who writes for the local newspaper. Now, Bruce Wayne, he's an international playboy, the billionaire owner of Wayne Enterprises. Bruce Wayne is a leader of men. He protects Gotham City with the help of Alfred the Butler, Police Commissioner Gordon, Robin, Catwoman. There's no simple solution to beating Batman. Aaron Rodgers is just as much of the Packers' problems this year as Mike McCarthy. All right, joining the desk now are Hall of Famer Rod Woodson, future Hall of Famer Tony Gonzalez. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Ran out of Hall of Famers.
I did.
Not over yet.
Columbia Hall of Fame.
Columbia doesn't count.
Columbia Hall of Fame. Start with you, Marcellus. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers, as much a part of the problem as Mike McCarthy.
He is, and I didn't want to come to that conclusion, but listening to you watching that game last night, when you're watching Aaron Rodgers become a part of the problem, for too long, Aaron Rodgers was sitting aside, separate from all the confusion and turmoil, and it was almost this NBA mentality to the Green Bay Packers, where you got a guy who goes out there, who's the star, and it seemed like everyone else on the Packers is just watching that star make all the plays. I mean, you can watch it right now when you see LeBron James out there, everyone, or Kobe Bryant of yesterday, of everyone just sitting around dancing. It's like, oh, what's he going to do? And then we could feed off of that. Now, he's not making those same plays in those same moments that lives up to his name and reputation of being Aaron Rodgers the Great. He's a part of the issue. I'm looking at this team, and Aaron Rodgers has to look and say, I have to be the star player that can help us overcome our adversities, overcome our obstacles. And there was a day where Aaron Rodgers was doing that consistently. Now he's kind of converted. I don't want to throw interceptions, 20 touchdowns, one interception. So I'm going to throw incompletions. He's throwing a lot of incompletions. His completion percentage, 28th in the league? In part because this offense lacks consistency. So I'm watching a guy start to become a part of the pack. And when he becomes a part of this pack, because of the lack of firepower they have, the result is what we saw last night.
You know, first of all, Jordan, his brother, shouldn't air family grievances publicly.
Going there?
That's the first thing. All right.
If they're family.
Secondly, when you look at it, first of all, the leaders start with the head coach. Think about all the great teams in this league right now. All right, you got Mike Tomlin, Bill Belichick, McVay, Sean Payton, Andy Reid. It starts there. The quarterback is a part of that. Yes, is he playing the way we've known Aaron Rodgers to play in the past? No. He has no running game. They're 20th in rushing. His defense doesn't make plays. If they do score, it's a 12, 10-play, 8-play drive down the field. He has to make all the plays. If he doesn't throw for three touchdowns, four touchdowns, 350 yards, they lose. Mm-hmm. That's unfair. That's unfair to any player. Now, what I do say is that we know that he hasn't played the way we normally see Aaron Rodgers play. He's missed some throws. The last couple, remember the fourth and one, he threw the ball in the dirt. That's not normally happening. Yesterday, he threw a second one. He was in the dirt. Then he misses Adams in the end zone.
Yeah.
That's normally not Aaron Rodgers-esque. You know, is he the leader of that football team? He doesn't have to be the leader of that football team in a sense that all quarterbacks aren't the leaders of the football team. Just because you're the great player doesn't mean you're the outspoken vocal player to galvanize your football team. It has to start with the head coach. I give more blame to Mike McCarthy because this system is the same system we've seen from day one. It hasn't changed at all. And you have to understand, Andy Reid has started this thing way back in the day in Philly. It's not the same offense he had in Philly. It's a different offense because it's a different year. So he has to come up with the times to help Aaron Rodgers out to win football games. And he has to get more players around him to help win football games. It can't be all put on his shoulders week in and week out, year after year after year. That's unfair.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think right now, yeah, he's part of the problem. I think psychologically he's been messed up since the beginning of the year. I remember before earlier in the year he was saying that I don't have the type of players that I need to go out there and make plays. And I think that's easy to say. Davante Adams, and then who else is there, really? Like a big-time football player on that offense. But he's still able to put up pretty decent numbers. Yeah, he's not playing like he used to. But if anybody's going to turn this around, he does it all. You went through the whole thing, R-E-L-A-X. We're going to run them all off. He just basically called his shot again. That's what I take that as. If anybody's going to turn this around, it's this man. I'd never go against this guy, and I won't until he doesn't able to deliver on what he says. Why would I go against what he's said before, and he's always come through with it? I would not be surprised. Are you going to be surprised when they rattle off five in a row, if they do?
It's not going to happen. Because
okay, we'll see.
Because what I believe is kryptonite has happened. And what kryptonite for Aaron Rodgers is, last year was the clavicle injury. This year it's the knee injury. The wear and tear on him, I think, is a ongoing problem moving forward for Aaron Rodgers. When I look at him miss Davante Adams, he just can't do what he used to be able to do. He could throw off his back foot. All of his mechanics could be wrong, and he could still deliver the ball right where it's supposed to be. I just don't think he can do that anymore. I think the wear and tear on his body is starting to catch up with him. Last year, he couldn't overcome them and their bad start. They fell short of the playoffs. It's going to happen again this year.
I'm with Tony on that one. Like, I'm not betting against this guy, even though there's no evidence this year that this team can rally five straight victories. But backs against the wall, with Aaron Rodgers being that talented at that position that has so much control and dictates terms for a football squad, you got to bet with this team. You got to bet that this team can try and figure this out in this moment because they do – look, they can't run the ball and they can't stop the run. And that's really undermining what they do.
Their offense was the problem last night, not their defense.
No, it wasn't. But creatively, they're not striking fear. Rodney Harrison made that point. Dungy went where you went, Rod, talking about the organization. Why aren't you stockpiling this team offensively, especially at the receiver position, when you have Aaron Rodgers, the great, as a talent at quarterback?
I'm going to go back to leadership again and in terms of rallying this team. I think Aaron Rodgers made it crystal clear he doesn't like Mike McCarthy. He's out on Mike McCarthy. And he's made that clear. If we can feel it here in Los Angeles, they damn sure can feel it in Green Bay. So I just don't think there's a foundation for them to rally around because you got your quarterback, your most talented player, the guy that's rescued you. He's not on board with the head coach. That's chaos. That's a recipe for a team to mail it in the rest of the season. They're not. Look, it won't just be the Bears that get them because the Bears are a good team. One of these other infant Jets, Cardinals, Falcons, somebody else is going to get them. They're not making the playoffs.
You might be right about that. They're inconsistent as a team, not just Aaron Rodgers. I mean, let's get that straight. Their defense doesn't get the turnovers the way they need. They got a lot of young guys in the back end, but they chose to have these young guys in the back end.
Yeah.
They chose to have this type of team. It is the general managers and the front office personnel opportunity or job is to give the coaching staff some weapons to have on the football field. And it's the coaching's job to put the best players on the field and look at the system itself and say, you know what? They didn't like Dom Capers, or the defense coordinator. They say, we needed some new blood, a new fresh look at it. And they bring in Pettin. And they haven't played terrible, but they haven't played great. But Mike McCarthy is the OC, basically, for this football team. He hasn't changed the system since they've been there. It's static. It's 2x2. They run some jet sweep. It's very predictable. You put all that pressure on that one quarterback, and you're telling that player, that individual player, out the multiple. This is the ultimate team sport.
He's wanted to be that guy. He's been that guy. I'm going to go back to leadership.
Everybody wants that. Everybody wants it on the shoulders, but they need help.
I'm going to go back to leadership and the difference between him and Tom Brady. Tom Brady had a little bit of a fight with Bill Belichick this offseason and early on this season. But Tom Brady also has Gronkowski and that whole team, that whole locker room behind
him.
But
the leadership starts with Bill Belichick.
I get it. But Brady and Belichick were at odds. The whole locker room, the players are with Tom Brady, and it has worked out. I just don't think guys in that locker room follow Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers' brother was wrong for airing out the dirty laundry. But it keeps happening to Aaron Rodgers. You got teammates that air him out and talk about him personally. His brother does it. And you know, last week, I think, to some degree, we talked about it as a money thing. And really, I think if you go do the research, it was more about his ex-girlfriend, Olivia Munn, and her clashing with the family. That's what drove a lot of that. I'm just saying, there's a quirk in Aaron Rodgers' personality that makes him different and not the same kind of leader as some of the other great quarterbacks.
You've been reading your Us Weekly, huh?
Right before checkout. Put the Snickers down and get the Us Weekly. Whitlock in there.
You know, my only knock against Aaron Rodgers ever, and I say this is, and you guys can agree with me or not, this is just my personal knock. It's about him taking $33 million. When your guys go down, Randall Cobb goes down, Geronimo goes down, then you don't have those backup players. I mean, some of those receivers out there, I'm like, who is that guy? I never even heard of that guy.
Right, right.
And he's throwing them open sometime. And so I think that messes with your confidence a little bit. I like Aaron, but also, too, it's what's been brought up about him before. Can he evolve with that offense? We talk about Mike McCarthy. I bet Mike McCarthy also would say, if he could talk to us, too, and say, well, you know what? Aaron likes to throw the ball deep. He likes to make those big splash plays where Tom Brady will throw the ball 5 yards, 6 yards, all the way down, doing whatever it takes to win, where Aaron wants to throw over the top and throw for big plays. You don't have those type of players anymore. You have to change this offense. There is no – they need to get those guys in positions to be successful, which is why the Belichicks are such good coaches, because they coach that.
And Mike McCarthy might have the opportunity to talk to us after
this
year, too.
Oh, he's coming. Hugh Jackson style.
He might have that opportunity.
We keep beating up on Mike McCarthy, and he's going to get fired. But a guy has to want to be coached as well.
No. Let's talk about that leadership. Well, yeah. Be real about Aaron. Look, if I were on that team, doesn't seem like the best leader for my style of play. Look, there are a lot of ways to lead, and Aaron Rodgers has a leadership issue in this respect. He could borrow something from Russell Wilson in terms of how Russell Wilson sounds scripted. Sounds like he's going out there and just thanking everyone for no apparent reason, but it does engage others to feel like they're a part of this group project. Aaron Rodgers, for many a times at the podium and just in his personal relationships with his teammates, doesn't empower them, so therefore it becomes this wait and let me go do this. If I don't do this, it doesn't happen. I know a lot of questions in that locker room, and I know one that is not the problem. Ty Montgomery was a scapegoat because you came on this show and everybody told me, oh, Ty Montgomery, get him out of town and then things are going to be fixed. No. This team hasn't won a game on the road, man. Bigger issues than just the player dynamic. It really starts at the top. And in Nets program, $67 million this year is Aaron Rodgers' payroll. Guess what? It starts with Aaron Rodgers and his lack of leadership.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, Rod Woodson and Tony Gonzalez are here. Let's return to the NFL, where Phillip Rivers tied an NFL record with 25 straight completions in the Chargers' dominating win over the Cardinals. Rivers is quietly having an MVP season, ranking in the top five in touchdowns and passer rating. Tony was on the Fox NFL Sunday yesterday and had an interesting Rivers comparison.
Do you guys remember the movie Toy Story? If Patrick Mahomes is Buzz Lightyear, then Phillip Rivers is Woody. Because look at him, he's still got it. What's so funny? Woody. Funny. You guys see Woody, right?
No.
Woody
Buzz Lightyear. You're just too smart for me. Oh, no, that's good.
I haven't seen Toy Story, but I do like the Patrick Mahomes, Phillip Rivers conversation. And the question, it's not about who's down the road, I think everybody's clear. Patrick Mahomes is the next great quarterback. All right, welcome back to the show. Whitlock and Wiley, we're joined now by Fox Sports basketball analyst, but more importantly, Ohio State alum Jim Jackson.
Man.
All right, Jim, let's move to your Buckeyes, who blew out the Wolverines 62-39 on Saturday. It was the most points Ohio State ever scored in the rivalry. Urban Meyer's group has now won four straight after their ugly loss to Purdue. Meanwhile, Oklahoma won a shootout versus West Virginia. Since both the Sooners and the Buckeyes are 11-1, that's led to a lot of debate over which team belongs in the college football playoff. I may have a bias because I watch more Big Ten than Big 12. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I've been unimpressed with the Big Ten. And so I feel like Ohio State exposed Michigan is overvalued. And I think Ohio State a bit overvalued. And again, it may be because I just haven't watched the Big 12 as closely this year, because I know the Big 12 hasn't been great. But I would rather see Oklahoma and that offense, the number one offense in the country, in the college football playoff over Ohio State.
You know, if Oklahoma's offense comes, that defense got to come too.
Whitlock. Exactly.
Whitlock, no, sir. I guess I watch a healthier portion of Big 12. This is Oklahoma team, horrible defense. I mean, not just in the points they put up, but you could just watch it by lineup, by assignment, by discipline. Just bad, wide open touchdowns. Watching them go against West Virginia, I'm like, is Randy Moss somewhere, like, trying to go back and play? This is insane. I'm watching this. And it's not great football. It's just great offensive production. I want to see Ohio State in the college football playoffs for many reasons. One, they've beaten more top 25 teams. 4-0 against those teams versus Oklahoma, just 1-0. So, that's not enough. I see the body of work for Ohio State. Two, let's respect what Ohio State is doing. They've rallied. Like, you talk about a loss and then galvanizing themselves and rallying. And in a game where most people were saying they're going to lose this game and probably it's going to be the worst game they lose this year because of Michigan and that defense, they go out there and give them a six-deuce Impala. They 62 on Michigan's defense? Are you kidding me? So for all those reasons, let's not even talk the economics. And, if there's a tie, everyone wants Ohio State in the college football playoffs. It's even.
Well, you know I do because, of course, I went to Ohio State.
There it is.
But the optics don't look good when you lose to an unranked Purdue team. 49-20. Okay, and like you said, Ohio State 4 top 20 wins with a chance against Northwestern to get one more.
All right.
Okay, but the loss for Oklahoma to Texas was on a neutral site.
Three-point
okay,
game.
Okay, so when the optics don't look good when you put it in that aspect, but when you look at it, if you're watching that Michigan game, you say, you know what, Ohio State's defense gotten a little bit better. even though they've been much maligned throughout the course of the year, just like Oklahoma. But the way it sits right now, the AP poll has Oklahoma 5, coaches poll Oklahoma 5. Power rankings may have it flip-flop, but unless Oklahoma loses that game against Texas, I don't see how Ohio State leapfrogs them.
Oh, that's going to be the team. One, look, I'd rather play Northwestern and dictate my fate than have to go against a team I already lost to. But for me, I think that the way that they leapfrog them, obviously, is a simple way of just winning their game and
Does Texas it just have to be a blowout? What if Oklahoma just barely beats Texas and Ohio State just routes Northwestern?
It's rooting interest for Ohio State. Let's just be real. Like, right. You know, this is all big business still. Right. In that college football playoff committee room, when they close the door, when the cameras are off, they're like, is there any way we get Ohio State in this conversation? Think about your eye roll. This is something that they talk about in boxing. How do you grade? How do you judge a boxing match? Which dude would you rather be? You want to, you know, just don't even get caught up in how many punches and stuff. Who would you rather be? I do not want to watch Alabama go against Oklahoma.
Why not?
99-23. Like, what would that score be? It would be insane. I do not want to see that. The eye roll would be way stronger. I want to see Ohio State give them a
reasonable. Why wouldn't it be a 55-51 game?
Because Alabama's defense is not giving up 51. Stop it. You already know that. That's my point. So Ohio State gives me the swing for the fences that I want to see in that 1-4 matchup.
We've seen Purdue curb stomp Ohio State.
We've seen Maryland. Maryland put up 51
points.
51. And that's the problem because I know that Urban is going to prepare his team, and we've seen it against Michigan, but then does it go back to this? Michigan, number one rated pass defense. Fine. But in the Big Ten, who else is prolific in scoring like that? So I don't know how relevant that really is to the conversation in regards to Ohio State. The game plan was great, especially on the defensive end from Urban Meyer and the defensive coordinator. Don't get me wrong. And I love to see from the optics Ohio State because we travel.
Yes.
Oh, we travel. When it come down to it,
yes,
we sell out and we take over. But I just don't see it happening just like last year when they lost to Iowa. Okay, when they shouldn't have lost. I don't see how it happens unless Oklahoma, which could because Texas, neutral side again, takes that L.
Look at you trying to prepare yourself. You know you're rooting against everything you said.
You know I am, but I'm being realistic.
Yeah.
All right, let's move to San Antonio in the NBA, where the Spurs are off to their worst start in 15 years. A lot of people are saying that's because they traded Kawhi Leonard to Toronto in the offseason. Saturday, Coach Greg Popovich fired back. He said Kawhi was a great player, but not a leader. Here's what Kawhi had to say about that.
I heard about it, but, you know, it's just funny to me because, you know, I don't know if he's talking about last year or not, but I guess when you stop playing, I forget how you lead. But other than that, I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm here with the Raptors, and I'm focused on the season and not what's going on the other side.
Nah, sir. If that doesn't sound like a great leader, I don't know what does.
Well, I'm not talking to you right now. That's messed up.
He didn't buy into it?
If that doesn't, I mean, he sounded like a great leader to me. I'm going to run through a wall for it. Look, Greg Popovich is a bully and a hater. And he's playing in a league that's really soft, and he's frustrated. His way of bullying players and all that stuff is going out the window, and the whole league caters to players and treats them like, you know, they're so precious and sensitive. And so he took a little shot here at Kawhi. It's the wrong. Pop's time has passed. He's reached his expiration date. It's a bad look, in my opinion. He sounds bitter.
It's a horrible look. Another pop shot, as I call it. You know, he stays salty of late, especially with this Kawhi thing. It really is because he spent so much time and energy, and look, with amazing results, building that culture. And how dare you, Kawhi Leonard? I thought you were the next one in line to carry this torch. Kawhi's going somewhere to light it. And now Popovich is like mind blown. No one wants to be a Spur anymore. Now they're playing non-playoff basketball in San Antonio right now. Hey, he's been a 21 straight playoff appearances. That may be broken this year. And you're still taking shots at a guy who's not going to suit up for your team. Look, I don't know who they employed with this initiative. And it started with Popovich. It went to Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, Bruce Bowen. He even lost his job doing it. Like, what the hell are y'all doing out there just shooting at Kawhi Leonard? It's a horrible look. They need to move past it.
Well, here's the thing about it. Pop wasn't asked a question about Kawhi. It was a follow-up question about leadership to Patty Mills. And then he kind of threw that in there. You got to keep in mind, this San Antonio Spurs team built their organization through drafts and free agency, but not big time free agents at the time. So they've always had somebody in line. Their roster really is not that good, okay? When you drafted Kawhi, you knew he wasn't a vocal person. You knew he wasn't going to be a vocal leader. So why even come out and throw about the thing that really pisses me off is that when Kawhi was there, they loved Kawhi because, one, he didn't get caught up into the Hollywood stuff. He was quiet. He was professional. He went about his business. It was the San Antonio way. But now when Kawhi was trying to look out for himself, all those same attributes that they said about him, now they looked at it like, well, we could never understand him. We couldn't read him. He wasn't vocal. I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah, that means they took him for granted. It's just as simple as that. They took him for granted. They mailed it in that Kawhi was going to be a Spur. Why? Because he's quiet. Hey, Tim Duncan was quiet. Guess what? He's going to be like our next Tim Duncan, 2.0. It's not that simple, man. And like you said, it's a horrible look when you prop someone up for all the same reasons that you're now trying to tear them down for.
Well, look, I'm going to defend Pop. Because I don't want to act like I haven't been there in terms of, you know, you develop and invest in someone. Show them. They didn't even know what Louboutin shoes were before they met you.
Preach.
He's rich.
Never carried a Louboutin shoe. Never carried a designer handbag in their life. And then they run off someplace else. And I put you in that position.
You ain't do jack. You just dressed up what I was.
Yeah.
So I get where Pop is coming from. Yeah. Again, if he doesn't play for Pop, they went out. Remember, they traded for him, I think, for George Hill or someone with the Pacers early on. They went out and got him, built him into this great player. And when it was his time to take over, he says he didn't want it. I would be a little bit bitter. I would hold my powder, though.
I don't want to pile on, Pop, but this is a felony. This is not a misdemeanor. Like, seriously, they had the Admiral talking bad about Kawhi last
Everybody
year.
Was. I mean, Everybody
I
was. Everybody was.
I mean, it was like all guns blaze on Kawhi. And this was literally bullying because this was a guy who was not fighting back. He was quiet. He just went about his business. He protected his body.
He went about laying down all last year.
Because they misdiagnosed him. But who's going to have the last laugh?
Thank you.
Kawhi's going to have the last laugh.
You don't want to play through a misdiagnosed injury, and then I put that on film, and then you now pay me according to that.
You're not healthy. You're not playing the way you were.
Especially this organization.
He had never eaten at a 5-star restaurant before Pop.
Good for him. That's good for him.
J.J. Watt. Mm-hmm. And Jadeveon Clowney, in combination with the other defensive players they have, are just problems that I just don't know if these offensive lines in the AFC can really solve. J.J. Watt, for all the hype, and Aaron Donald certainly deserves it, and Khalil Mack certainly deserves it. He got traded. They've been stealing the headlines, but J.J. Watt just keeps chopping wood. 11.5 sacks. He's more effective in the running game than Donald or Khalil Mack. J.J. Watt is still the most dominant defensive player in the NFL. And the Saints certainly can't say that. The Chiefs certainly don't have anybody comparable. New England doesn't have anybody comparable. We'll see what Nick Bosa does with the Chargers the rest of the season. And obviously the Rams have Aaron Donald. But I just think J.J. Watt is still the man on the defensive side of the ball. And I think Deshaun Watson's best days are ahead of him, even this season.
I think the point about the trench play really matters because you talk about J.J. Watt. It's not just J.J. Watt. It's his partners that he brings with him, Jadeveon Clowney, Whitney Merciless, those guys being able to create a pass rush. They're one of the few teams. They won't have to blitz to get home. So now when you're playing the high-powered Kansas City Chiefs, they can drop 7. They can drop 8 and still get a pass rush. I just like the way this defense is positioned because even though it's been a, like, pass-happy league, we've seen all kinds of record numbers. The game slows down in the postseason. I just believe that they can make you play half-court basketball. Hmm. And when you have Deshaun Watson, I think he can finish it if the game is like that.
Yeah. You look at the running backs, because I think that's where you got these good high-powered defenses that can get after that quarterback. I think what has really helped, first of all, the rules, the way it's set up for the offense to win, that's what they want and is what you see right now. But Kareem Hunt, I think that can be an extension. You're not going to have to sit back there. Andy Reid is a beautiful play caller. I think Phillip Rivers, Melvin Gordon, depending on how healthy he is, he's one of those guys that can catch those quick screens, those quick passes, extension of the run game to slow them down, slow that defense down. And then Tom Brady, who's been better in the NFL history of being patient and taking what the defense gives you. I love this team. I think, and I would not going to be shocked if they get to the Super Bowl, but I just think right now, for me, those other teams have an advantage.
Well, let's talk about J.J. Watt. I mean, when you talk about, he's different than Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald's playing amazing, not taking anything away from him. Khalil Mack, insane. J.J. Watt, if you look at his resume, 2 times over 20-plus sacks. 2 times, and then he followed that up with a 17-and-a-half sack season. This year, 11-and-a-half. And this is a guy who's still trying to play himself into form, into shape, and into confidence, as you said, Tony. What's amazing about J.J. Watt is most offensive linemen have already given up a sack to him as soon as they see him on the field. Like this dude's superhero strength and levers. We talk about leverage, which is coming from the root word lever. The dude's levers, his length, and the fact that he's forcing fumbles at a career rate, 5 forced fumbles. He can score. He can not only create opportunities for you to score, he can take it into the end zone himself. He's a disruptor. When you talk about playoff football, special igniting plays, J.J. Watt still is the standard for all D-linemen.
And that's what I thought we saw last night. Marcus Mariota played a hell of a game. But J.J. Watt, because, and again, we'll talk about this later in the show when we talk about how to evaluate quarterbacks, but J.J. Watt and Covington and that pass rush knocked this dude down 6 times. Those 6 sacks, they're almost like turnovers now. Sacks are. They're so valuable. So even though a quarterback went 22 of 23 passing for 300-some-odd yards, mm-hmm. they scored 17 points because of the sacks, because of the disruptive factor of a J.J. Watt. And so it's one of those deals where Patrick Mahomes, love him to death. He may put up huge numbers. But if they knock him down a few times and create third and longs and things and get him off the field that way, the numbers will be great, but they will not score points just like Tennessee didn't last night.
J.J. Watt, and here you're talking about J.J. Watt coming back. I don't think anyone saw this coming. Coming off of back-to-back leg and back injuries, you didn't expect him to play at the level that he played at when he was a 3-time defensive player of the year. But his ability to dominate at the line of scrimmage is a problem, and it's really more problematic because the guys that he has with him, Jadeveon Clowney can win one-on-ones. Whitney Mercilus can win one-on-ones. So when you face the Texans, you have to figure out where are we going to slide the protection to, who do we want to neutralize, and the other guys can win. Most teams, particularly in the AFC, they don't have offensive lines that are built to deal with 3 pass rushers at the point of attack. The Texans have a huge advantage. J.J. Watt is leading the way, but it's the homeboys that are a problem.
Really? J.J. Watt's better than Aaron Donald right now?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Khalil Mack, I mean, it's just – I know – I'll take all of them. I said it's the Ferrari, the Bugatti, the Rolls Royce. Which one do you want? But – I really like Aaron Donald right now. I think right now he's playing at the top of
not
of his
as
game.
Effective in the running game, in my opinion.
I give you that too.
Not as disruptive in the
running
game.
Yeah, that's why they get gassed in their running game. And that's what Kansas City should have did, you were saying, when they played the Rams. Like, you're supposed to attack those pass rushers. Attack J.J. Watt just because of leverage, just because of dimensions. He's still going to have impact in the running game. He sets the edge. He creates turnovers. He's disruptive. And then he finishes off with a bow and says, here's the sack force combo as well. Next level.
It's time to put on our thinking caps. Bucky Brooks joins us as we take a deeper look into a sports issue of today. Marcellus, of course, is an Ivy League graduate from Columbia. We still don't have any proof. I've never seen the diploma.
And you won't.
But he says he's an Ivy League graduate. All right, Darnell, bring out Marcellus' special cap.
Oha!
He is allegedly the smartest person in this segment.
Bathe them thoroughly.
Allegedly. All right, let's move to the NFL, where Philip Rivers posted the most accurate game in NFL history Sunday, completing 28 of 29 passes in a win over the Cardinals. But Rivers wasn't the only guy on the money this week, with Marcus Mariota posting the second most accurate game in NFL history, going 22 of 23 in last night's loss to the Texans. In fact, this seems to be the year of the accurate passer. With 4 quarterbacks completing more than 70% of their passes, which is as many as in the previous 23 seasons, combined.
Wow.
That makes me, because look, Philip Rivers did it and they won in a blowout. They beat up Arizona. It was like, oh man, incredible performance, Philip Rivers. Marcus Mariota does it last night. He gets beat in a blowout.
Yeah.
And so it makes me think, one, it diminishes a bit what Phillip Rivers did when I see a guy the next night damn near do the same thing and get beat. And so I'm not sure with the new NFL rules and the way the passing game has gone and all the short passing and, again, guys, anybody can run over the middle without fear. Anybody can catch the ball without fear, all this defenseless receiver stuff. I'm not sure if completion percentage is a great indicator of who's playing well at the quarterback position. And so one of the reasons why we wanted to have you here, Bucky, is just I wanted to figure out how should we be evaluating quarterbacks. My take, and I'll break it down a little bit later, is just like sacks and interceptions. That's how I'm evaluating quarterbacks.
Yeah, I'm going to speed through mine also because I'm excited to hear what Bucky has to say. I said this before I even got on the show, working with Bucky. He's the Rosetta Stone of football. Sucker would translate the game for any language, any person out there, man. But in short, for me, I just think the heightened emphasis on the passing game has really created this unintended consequence, and also the fact that you're going to get more effective, efficient offenses in the passing game. Everyone is now putting their priority and their focus on the passing games. You're going to see upticks in everything from yardage. You're going to see in completion percentage. It's just a more effective model. But Bucky, Rosetta Stone, let me hear it.
No, I think you touched on a bunch of different things. The rule changes have made it where more offensive coordinators feel like the best way to move the ball is through the air. And so what these coordinators have done, they've created these short passing games where the ball is coming out, but it's coming out 10 yards or fewer. So now the shorter the pass, the more accurate the throw, because the percentage being in your favor that you can be more accurate on a shorter toss. And so the thing that I look at when I'm looking at quarterbacks, completion percentage is one thing, but also look at the yards per attempt. And if you can go even farther, we use next-gen stats to see air yards. How far is the ball actually traveling from his hand, from the line of scrimmage to the intended target? If they're moving the ball beyond 10 yards, then you see, like, hey, they're really taking high-risk, high-reward throws, and it's resulting in these big explosive games. When you're looking at quarterback play and efficiency, it goes back to the same thing. Touchdowns, interceptions. High touchdowns, low interceptions. Those guys that really have those high ratios typically play at a high level. Drew Brees, you talk about 20-plus touchdowns, only two interceptions. So I want to see the points come from the passing game, but I don't want to see the giveaways, because turnovers are the biggest deciding factor in games.
And you just talked about it. So what you're saying, the long handoff, as we say. And I remember when the game started to change. We saw this evolution, and we saw the results and consequences of the same evolution. Look what they've done to skilled players. And skilled position players, fullback, running back, wide receivers, tight end, obviously the quarterback. They started to say, look, hey, fullbacks, get out of here.
Yep.
You guys have the toughest time catching the ball out the backfield. Let's just be real. Hey, running back, if you don't catch the ball out of the backfield, you won't be top echelon. Look at the top backs, Gurley, Kamara, Zeke. Like, they're Kareem Hunt, they're all catching the ball out the backfield. And now they're looking at the tight end position. And they're like, look, brother, if you're not 6'6", 240 playing offseason basketball, we don't need you. All this power plowing tight end position, they're attacking them now to create long handoff situations, which increases the completion percentage.
Look, Bucky, I want your take on this. I had them do a board of the top 10 quarterbacks, a graphic, top 10 quarterbacks in terms of low number of sacks taken and interceptions thrown. And when you look at that, Drew Brees, to me, is having the best season at the quarterback position, and voila. Combined sacks and interceptions, only 12. And so, to me, why I factor in sacks is because who can read the defense quickly and get the ball out of his hands? And, yeah, the Saints have a very good offensive line. But look at who's number two, Andrew Luck at 23. They don't have a great offensive line. Andrew Luck is moving that football quickly.
And, you know, when you think about Andrew Luck, and I think it speaks to the way the game is changing, Frank Reich has done a great job of changing the way the passing game is. When Andrew Luck throws the ball short and intermediate, they get everyone out and the ball is out quick. When they take shots, you notice 2- and 3-man routes. So that means a guy like Marcellus can't get to the quarterback because he's facing max protection.
Yeah.
Smart coordinators are doing a great job of setting their quarterbacks up for success, which is why you're seeing so many quarterbacks play at a higher level.
Yeah, but that list, I mean, you did your homework, you did your research, you got here early, okay, respect for that. But I didn't see Patrick Mahomes on that list in terms of great quarterback play. Drew Brees was number one, that makes sense. Can I see the list again one more time? But what I've learned from playing against quarterbacks is the best offensive lineman I ever faced was a smart quarterback, was Peyton Manning. Like, Peyton Manning didn't care who was in front of him. I'm looking if my LASIK surgery is don't see Patrick Mahomes.
But Patrick Mahomes is not. He's got 32 combined. He's just off but, the and top 10.
And is that Joe Flacco in tied second place?
Joe Flacco is in third place. You got to remember.
Third place? That's 23.
He sat out a couple of games.
Oh, okay, okay.
And so that's the same thing with
Deshaun Watson. You just told me he was going to be a Super Bowl winner.
And look, I'm about to tell you that. Okay. That's what's interesting.
All right, let me hear.
Of the starting quarterbacks in the league, he's the worst at 48 combined sacks and interceptions. Yeah. Yeah, he's thrown a high number of interceptions. He's taken a lot of sacks, particularly early in the season when they were getting beaten up. I knew this afternoon when I was arguing about the Texans and all that. That's the red flag with Deshaun Watson. But I think it's something that, remember, Deshaun Watson only got to play six or seven, or he didn't get to play a full season last year, coming off an injury. I think there's some shaking off of rust. I expect Deshaun Watson to play at a more efficient level the latter half of the season than he did in the first half of the season. But, yeah, when you look at the rest of the guys at the bottom of the list, Deshaun Watson's at 48, Dak Prescott, 47. Eli Manning, 47. Derek Carr, 47. Matt Stafford, 45. Again, it's a telltale sign of good quarterback play. It's somewhere where Deshaun Watson has to improve. But again, when I look, I think we've gone from, and Marcellus, you make the point, we used to look at high sacks and it's just the offensive line.
Right.
I think Peyton Manning has taught us, no, the quarterback can make a huge difference. And that's another way to evaluate quarterback play.
Just looking at your list, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, Roethlisberger on there, guys that have played for a long time, they understand the internal clock to get the ball out. They can protect the offensive line. You've heard Tom Brady say, why would I want to give up this game now when I have all the answers to the test? It's their ability to quickly read the defense and get it out. And so veteran quarterbacks should play better because they have more experience. They know how to play the game. I think it's more impressive when you see a young quarterback on the list. It's either his ability or the coach's ability to craft an offense that allows him to play fast.
Yeah, I mean, we're going back to the laws of nature now. First law of nature is survival, you know, self-preservation. And if you're a smart quarterback, you learn that. I love how you said internal clock, because before you thrive, you got to survive. And it's too many times I entered NFL when there was a Drew Bledsoe, Vinny Testaverde, old Marino. And for whatever reason, they didn't even want an internal clock because they wanted the seven-step drop, let you run the long fly routes. And as a defender, we were like, this is amazing. One, you don't even have to have the same hip turn on a seven-step drop, because even if the tackle think he's doing a great job, you're washing me right back to that quarterback who's 10 yards deep. I saw Jared Goff after his game in the post-game press conference against the Chiefs say, I've been working on my drops, my distance from center, which is amazing because a lot of times you can protect yourself if you just stay in that bubble. But stay tight and make sure that your offensive guards get proper support and anchor, no push. You stay right there, you're tucked. 2-3 seconds, get rid of it, offensive line, almost obsolete.
Here's what's changed from the days you're talking about, Marino and those guys. Used to be one of the greatest signs of great quarterback play was toughness in the pocket. Mm. It was the guy, Phil Simms was tremendous at holding the ball, giving his receiver an extra shot, extra chance to make a play, and releasing the ball and taking that delivery sack.
Yeah.
Well, now they've virtually illegalized the delivery sack. They hit after the quarterback just released the ball, and it's no longer that great sign of toughness. Peyton Manning was the best quarterback in the league for a long time, and he hated taking sacks and would fall down, and it made it okay for everybody else not to be that tough in the pocket. The game has really changed, but I'm glad we had this conversation. Gives you something to think about when it comes to quarterback play. Let's move to Pittsburgh, where the Steelers took a tough loss to the Broncos Sunday, and by Monday, Ben Roethlisberger was on the radio pointing out the shortcomings of his own team, calling out Antonio Brown's route running, offensive coordinator Randy Feitner's play calling, and rookie receiver James Washington's hands. Well, today, Big Ben didn't back away from putting his own teammates on blast.
I think that I've earned the right to be able to do that with as long as I've been here. And, you know, it's and I'll be just as critical on myself as well in front of you guys as well.
What's your approach to how players in the locker room might receive those kind of things? Like, for instance, if you critique a route or something like that?
Go ask them. I have no idea. You have to ask them. I would hope that they would understand that as the quarterback and a captain that I have the right to do those things. I don't feel like I abused that situation. So, you know, I don't think there's an issue, but you'd ask them.
Big Ben's my favorite player.
Is he?
He's crazy.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay.
Anybody, he looks like John, plays like John Elway, wears number 7, love Big Ben.
All
but
in.
He's crazy.
Yeah.
I've earned the right after I throw the interception that costs us the game. Uh-huh. I've earned the right to call out my teammates. This is the head coach's job. And so Big Ben, to me, always stumbles when he tries to do too much. Hmm. On the field, off the field, whatever. Let Mike Tomlin critique the players if he wants to publicly. They don't need it from Big Ben. I don't think he's earned that right, particularly on a day after you just blew the game with one of the worst interceptions I've ever seen.
He has earned that right. And I think as a veteran player, as a future Hall of Famer player, as a Super Bowl champion, he's certainly earned that right, and captain elected by his same peers. Here's the thing. Coaches are allowed to criticize, but they need enforcers to make sure that their culture is restored. And he's one of the enforcers. He's one of the guys on the front lines making sure that you're doing your job and I'm doing my job. But here's the problem. Here's the rub. I love your eye roll right now. Here's the rub. You are fear-based, like many people are, in terms of criticism. Most people are scared to truly criticize because they're fearing the U-turn of that criticism coming back to them. So Jason Whitlock says, how dare you criticize Big Ben after throwing an interception? I love Big Ben, who pushes past that fence of saying, don't criticize because you're not perfect either. He says, I know it's going to be a day where I'm going to be the one being criticized.
And it was Sunday.
And it was Sunday, and it will be another Sunday coming. But guess what? Still doesn't change the reality of this moment. You need to pick it up. You need to pick it up. Oh, you're pointing back at me? I need to pick it up. And I've seen Big Ben in those moments before who's actually took that heat. So I respect Big Ben, who's not fear-based and says, hey, we all got to live by a certain game plan.
I'm 6-6 on this. I don't have a problem with it, but I have a problem because you went out and you publicly said it to the media. I had a situation where I had said some things to a media person, and it ended up getting out. And I apologize for that because I shouldn't have spoke to that person about family business so, you know, openly to him. Like you said, it's going to be a point in time where it's going to be, that was my fault. I'm going to have to take, you know, charge of that. But I don't feel like I should be the player saying, oh, hey, Ben, you threw 2-3 picks. I shouldn't be that guy saying that. And if I am that guy saying that, that should be something I should say to him behind closed doors. Like I said, at the same time, he did earn that right. He doesn't abuse that right, like he said. But it's a hard thing to swallow when you have players such as, you know, Antonio Brown, who is playing, you know, at the top of his game, and you're saying, you're criticizing me about one little route that was, I didn't run it right, but at the same time, the DB had undercut it, and if the D lineman didn't get it, the DB might have. So it's kind of hard when, you know, like I said, I'm 6-6 on it.
Yeah, but who's to say that he didn't talk to Antonio first? Private matters, right. A lot of times when you go to the media, hey, we already broke this down.
Why does he need to go to the media with it if you talk to him?
Because you old school. Like, y'all keep saying family business. The family model that we all grew up in is not the family model that exists today currently. The family model now is a reality show. Cameras already in there. Instagram and live and my coach talking. 24/7 access. This is not airing out.
That was one incident.
Exactly.
We all know what you're talking about, but that was only one incident.
This is not airing out dirty laundry. It's a new day. You got to get with these new times.
As a quarterback, you know, especially Big Ben is one of the best. I'm a huge Big Ben fan as well. You know, I've been watching him since I was a kid, so he definitely has earned that right time and time again to be able to say what he wants to any of his teammates, and honestly to any of his coaches. You know, of course, I know Mike T from back in Virginia, but I think Big Ben did right. I think as a quarterback, you have to be able to say, hey, man, I need you to do this on this route, and hey, I need you to pick it up on this play. But at the same time, I think he's owned up to all of his own mistakes as well. There's been plenty of times where Ben has thrown 3 or 4 interceptions and has done it the same way and looked at the media right in the eye and said, hey, that's on me. I need to fix my game as well.
He just threw an interception to a defensive tackle on the goal line when the wide receivers covered. And afterward, oh, it was the flukiest play, luckiest thing that ever happened. He didn't take any ownership or accountability for that. Look, man, the guy played the Mid-American Conference. Love him. Mm. Plays like John Elway. Love him. The guy is not accountable. He's part of the problem. He's part of the reason to me.
You can't say he's not accountable. Like you said, it's plenty of times that he stepped to that podium and said, you know what, that's on me. Right. You know, yeah. I've heard that plenty of times.
Yeah.
So you can't say he's not accountable.
Brady calling on his
I think the issue is that loss, you feel like everyone is taking it as a nonchalant, like, oh, yeah, you know, I threw a pick. It was an interception. We lost. Nobody really expected to lose to them. So the fact that they played horrible and lost is not a surprise to them. They're going to come back. They're going to play against Chargers, and you're going to see a totally different team.
And I want to empower you as my teammate that when you mess up, and then I follow that up with a mess up, please come at me with the criticism. Don't sit there and sulk in your sorrows. Oh, you know what? I messed up, so I can't really tell Marcellus anything right now. That's not how you build. That's not how you get better. Big Ben is saying, look, there is a standard here. When I don't live up to it, come at me. But when you don't live up to it, I'm coming at you. It's just simple.
All right, welcome back. EJ Manuel, James Harrison are back. You all know Marcellus is that dude. Now he's going to show us the best plays from big guys around football. It's time for Dat Dude's Dudes. Marcellus, what you got?
Give some shine, some love to the big uglies out there. Not just Whitlock, not just me, but the big uglies in the trenches. Let's get to Dat Dude's Dudes. And let's start this off with our third Dat Dude's Dude, Vanderbilt's linebacker, Josh Smith. Just take what they give you. I know I should have put a little more sauce on that title, but he has to take what they give him. You can see him lined up right now. Two-point stand, Josh Smith. Okay, got that linebacker speed. Oh, but what happens here? Watch the footwork. Trying to do a speed rush with me, just standing in place. But it actually is to his advantage. Getting his feet caught up under him. The tackle sets a little too wide. Now you see that opening on the inside. What you got to do now, you see him trying to go through the arm and rip through it because he sees that opening. Oh, my goodness. Now, as offensive tackle, you're trying to push him by, but a little too late. And this is the worst position to ever be in as offensive tackle. Which one of y'all going to sack your quarterback? He looks like he's going to sack the quarterback. But Josh Smith beats you to the punch. Number three, Dat Dude's Dude of the Week. Let's get to number two. Cardinals defensive tackle Robert Kimdichie. Oh, the shape of water. I'm in love with this play right here. Even though it happened against my L.A. Chargers, you see him going to Phillip Rivers, taking them down. Oh, and play that funky music, Black. I ain't saying the rest. All right. Now we lined up in three technique, Robert Kimdichie. Watch this butt and bench. Bow! That's old school football right there. Butt him, shock him, and what happens when you shock him? Oh, look at that left arm. Not a punch. That's on the outside. So Kimdichie is now saying, the path of least resistance is actually to the inside. Look at that. I saw that tight end come in there. But now he is going to go out there and use the law of accommodation. Bruce Lee, help.
Empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now, you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now, water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
Oh, he's going to become water. Look at this law of accommodation. Look at that dead arm. He just let his arm go. He said, oh, you want to push against me? You want to show resistance? Nothing's there. It's called the dead arm. Oh, technique right there. Robert Kimdichie finishes out, makes Bruce Lee proud. Third. Number two, Dat Dude of the Week.
Now let's. Water, one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Man, I ain't talking to you right now. Number one, Ravens DN, Matthew Judon. Hitting him with that triple sec. Ooh, nice inside move right there. I see James Harrison up here shaking, loving that move right there. And you're going to see how he gets this handle as he takes off into the tunnel. You see right now, that offensive tackle, poor you, he's given up two sacks in a row already. So he's thinking, oh, man, I got to really commit to this one. I can't give up three sacks in a row, can I? Oh, yes, you can. Do you not recognize that right arm is on the outside? Do you not recognize with your punch, which looks great, his body, his lower legs are not going around the hoop. They're going through you. That's a setup. Now he puts that left leg in the ground and watch that right arm turn into a claw. I have set you up for the inside move, and now there's no recovering, as you can see. My man Parker trying his best to recover, but there's no way you're going to back block me. I am at Derek Carr, and now it's time for bobblehead. Landed on the ground, head gone, and Matthew Judon didn't know what play it was, just sack after sack after sack. Took off to the tunnel, but brother, it's third down. He out there dapping his boys up. Number one dap dude of the week. My man, Matthew Judon.
That was awesome. All right, let's move to New York, where much of the blame for the Giants' failed season has fallen on Eli Manning and head coach Pat Shurmur. But after Odell Beckham Jr. called out the team's game plan following their loss to the Eagles, sports talk radio legend Mike Francesa says the Giants need to move on from the wide receiver they just paid $95 million.
Mm.
Listen, man, I don't know. Mike Francesa, I guess, needed to make some news and screaming and shouting, hey, let's move on from Odell. Man, they just gave the guy $100 million, and they knew what they were giving him the money for.
Mm.
They knew Odell's going to stay in the news to some degree. And if all he's doing is talking a little smack about play calling, that's light for Odell.
Yeah.
He ain't kissing no kicking nets. He ain't down on some yacht partying before no game.
Right. Right.
You know, this is standard Odell.
Yeah, I didn't understand this one. I was like, why are you going in on Odell? It's not by production. If you really want to go in on someone, we know who that is. We know the elephant in the room. It's Eli Manning. It's the offensive philosophy, even though Eli's played better of late. Odell is on pace of having a career year. Depends on how he finishes off, but it doesn't feel like the same sizzle, the same sauce is on this season. But by the numbers, Odell out there getting it, already over 1,000 yards after his 11th game. So respect to Odell, but look, he's a multiple offender of misdemeanors, kissing nets, as you said, all the stuff he's done. But I don't see this guy as a distraction. I don't see
him. He's a distraction.
He's not a what? Hold on.
He's a distraction.
Distraction in terms of I'm taking us off course or I'm trying to put us on course.
Right.
To me, he's the attraction, not the distraction.
No, I 100% agree. I think Odell has every right, once again, going back to the right piece, to say what he wants to say. I think Odell is obviously the franchise guy along with Eli Manning, but he wants the ball. How can this guy get upset for Odell speaking on, you know, speaking his mind about wanting the ball and wanting to help his team win? I don't understand that. Like, what does he want him to say? Nah, you know, shy away from the opportunity to make big plays. Like, he wants the ball. That's what receivers do. That's what the greats are doing. T.O., Keyshawn Johnson, hundreds of guys, Randy Moss, they want
Odell
the ball.
Because he got exactly what we're doing right now, which is talking about him talking about Odell.
Mm. Right.
That's the only thing that he accomplished. Odell can't go out there and throw himself the ball, block for everybody, and, you know, go out there and score touchdowns doing everything by himself. You know, they paid him to go out there. And like he said, look at the numbers. The numbers speak for themselves. And they're not even winning those games right now. Think if that they went out there and got an offensive line that could block, a quarterback to get it to him when he needed to get it to him.
Man.
Woo. Then they'd be talking about, we got a great deal.
Right.
Let's be exactly clear, man. Because I think if the show continues, every NFL player has earned the right to do whatever the hell they want the way this is
said. Y'all start.
I mean, does anybody just have to shut up and do their job?
Hold on. It's a production-based business.
He's pointing out something that was obvious. Like, you know, that's something that, hey, I feel like if we had did this, we would have had a better chance of winning.
Well, first of all, I think he was uninformed, and Pat Shurmur pointed out, hey, go look at the film. Look at how many chunk plays we had. We did to the best of our ability exploit the weaknesses in the defense.
Mm.
Odell's sometimes just running his mouth. This is, again, I'm not sitting here calling for you got to move on from him because of this. This is Odell being Odell. He is a distraction. They signed up for that distraction because they think the production justifies it. Y'all think.
Y'all?
If that's the biggest
distraction, then, yeah, you can take it Odell, with that production.
Odell did his homework. I don't know, Pat Shurmur did his homework, but as much as you pointed out, Coach, you could have pointed out more of us exploiting that pass defense. 28th ranked. I'm Odell Beckham, setting NFL records in my young career, and you're going to get me against the 28th ranked pass defense, and I catch 5 passes. Like, I just need more targets. There's a way to shut Odell up, and it's not based on his production.
Just giving him the ball. Yeah, I get it.
And doesn't that work for them? If they get Odell the ball.
What if they won with Odell?
Don't do that championship.
No, I'm just asking. What do they want with Odell?
Odell's not the reason they haven't
he
won.
He wet the bed in the playoffs when they got there because he was there partying on a yacht and everything. He is a distraction.
That yacht was that day,
he didn't wet the bed. He didn't wet the bed in that playoff game and drop all them balls.
He did drop some balls. Yeah. But he also dropped balls without going on yachts before. I've seen him do that,
right,
too. So what you going to do? Yeah. Is it coincidence or is it causation? Is it correlation or what?
All I'm saying is
everybody want to point to something when something don't go right.
Exactly. That's and we lost the king of that.
Have you earned the right to say that? Everybody's earned the right to say whatever they want.
Everybody ain't earned the right to say what they want. But to that point, I earned the right to say whatever I want.
Yeah, James Harrison asked. James Harrison asked. I had moments. He always could. Yeah, for real.
James Harrison and TJ Houspenzada are back. Let's return to Dallas, where Jerry Jones has been talking up tonight's Cowboys-Saints matchup all week, saying his team needs to treat it like the Super Bowl. I wasn't a fan of Jerry's comments until a local news outlet pointed out that every time Jerry has opened his mouth this year, the team has responded. When Jerry compared Dak Prescott to Jared Goff, the Cowboys went out and had a season high in yards. When he promised to give Dak an extension, Dak had one of his best games of the year. And when he said his team could compete with the NFL's top offenses, Dallas scored 30 and put up 400 yards. All right, this is not ideal what Jerry's doing.
Right.
Sitting here in Los Angeles. Jerry sits in Dallas and has a very good relationship with the guys in that locker room. I think he knows what emotional buttons to push. And as I've been talking throughout the show, I think you got to put pressure on Dak Prescott. I think he's putting the right pressure on his team to get them to play an incredible performance tonight on Thursday Night Football. I think it's actually going to work.
I think it's helped, certainly. This three-game win streak certainly was driven by Jerry Jones and what were deemed as outlandish comments, but inspiring comments in the locker room. Publicly supporting Dak Prescott when he wasn't playing his best football, already outwardly negotiating with a guy and telling him, hey, man, you're secure. I don't know why you're out there even thinking about this. Play your game. We got you. He's our quarterback for the next decade. All of a sudden, Dak Prescott starts playing his best football to the point where last week he played his best game this year. So I can see where it's working. And Jerry Jones, the great businessman he is, has a tremendous acumen in terms of personal skills and also how to deal with the mighty dollar. And Jerry Jones just basically read the manual. You guys read that book, The Secret, that came out? Y'all remember that thing? A few years ago, Speak It Into Existence. Yeah. Was like, you know, everyone took it away from it. Speak It Into Existence. And you can, today, you go on somebody's Instagram story, and Speak It Into Existence, I'm going to be a millionaire. No, you're not. But you know what? Jerry Jones was speaking to existence. Dak Prescott is our franchise quarterback. He believed it. He bought in. I think Jerry knows which button to push.
Well, I was set to go against that and say that it was a bad idea until I saw the numbers over there. So I'm going to say it's good for the Cowboys now. obviously, they listen to what he say, and the things that he says, it puts good pressure on them, and they go out there and they perform well to it. But I still don't see them winning this game.
I know
we'll
what you're doing. Wait a second.
We'll get to that.
Look at that face.
Hate him or love him with Jerry Jones, he publicly had Dak Prescott's back when he was playing at his worst.
Yes.
Jerry Jones is an owner that if you're on his team, he has your back. And so when he comes out and speaks like this, as a player, you want to perform. Mm-hmm. Because the mind controls the body. So he said what he said so that the guys could really start to visualize, like, we can win this game. If we put our minds to it, we're going to go through anything to try to get this W. You want this owner, we're just as good as this team. We score 30 points. Oh, our offense just good. We put up 400 yards. Mm-hmm. And so he's trying to get his team to believe in what they can do, and I'm with him. We're going to get a close game just because of the way Jerry has come out and put the pressure on his team, but when he's done that, they've delivered.
James, you made your career in Pittsburgh playing for the Rooneys. They have the great reputation, spotless reputation or whatever. What do you think of the Rooneys or in comparison to Jerry? Would you have preferred to have played for a Jerry Jones, outspoken, fun-loving, friend of the player's owner, or the Rooneys that kind of stay in the background?
The Rooneys were friends with the players. You know, you conversated with them on day in and day out basis. They just weren't outspoken with the media as far as what they felt like needed to be done. I enjoyed playing for the Steelers and the Rooney family. So I wouldn't want it to be, you know, anywhere else than there. But, you know, Jerry has a different way of operating.
Way to protect that ambassador. Hey, it's too much money going forward. Talking about the Rooney.
TJ, you played for Mike Brown, a guy that kind of has a mixed reputation in the league. Would you have preferred to play for someone like Jerry?
It's a funny story. My rookie year, I barely played, and I was drafted late. So I see Mike Brown, and we're walking, and I see him. And people have said Mike Brown does not talk to players. He stopped me. Mm. and we were just having a conversation. Literally after that conversation, it was like vets on the team. Bro, did he stop you and talk to you? What y'all was talking about? Mm. Damn, he like you. He don't talk to nobody. And when I left the Bengals and I went to other teams, I kind of missed the dynamic, the family atmosphere that the Bengals had, because you see some, you recognize every, you would talk to Mike Brown all the time. You would talk to Katie Blackburn and Troy Blackburn a lot. You go to these other teams and they just didn't have that type. Me, the way Jerry Jones backs his players, I would love that, because when you go and you don't have that, it just didn't seem right. It didn't feel right.
Well, right. Why you're in Dallas that bad that you're the only dude who played for Jerry Jones? You can't even ask him the question.
I know you love Jerry Jones because yeah. He put money in your pocket.
He helped me out, man. He helped me out. No, but in all seriousness, Jerry Jones, I think, becomes a target. He puts himself in those positions. We take shots at him. But beyond all the smoke, in the ownership meetings, he is well-respected. He's one of the guys that is leading the charge in many initiatives. And just as a player, you knew every fourth quarter, Jerry's going to show up on that sideline like he's another player and another guy with you. So I do love that.
You know what's good about Jerry, too? Think about when they had the uncapped year. Jerry was like, I'm paying my players.
You know it.
I'm paying my players. And the NFL tried to punish him for that. He's putting money in guys. If uncapped year, I can spend what I want to spend. And he was putting money in guys' pockets, and it was at week nine, like, we're not going to spend any money. But Jerry Jones did it.
Yeah.
And as a player, that's what you want. You want somebody that's going to have your back and pay you. And
all right, listen, we spent the first half of this show talking about one of the biggest Thursday night football games ever. Marcellus clearly thinks it's going to be a blowout.
Spanking.
So I want to have a bet with you, Marcellus, on the game, but I also want to have one with James. I'm going to bet you straight up.
Straight
up. The Cowboys are going to win this game. You set the stakes.
I feel like I need to help you out. So, how you feel about 10 anytime push-ups? That means anytime I ask for them, you give me them. Whether it's one or two, up to 10 in total.
Anytime. Anytime. You can just call me middle of the night and I got to do 10 push-ups.
I got to be there to see it, because I don't believe you go gym. Catch you walking out the studio. Hey. Give me one.
And it's raining today.
And it's raining. Yes, hands on the ground.
Oh. No problem. We got Cowboys win. You're going to have to give me some points.
Some points?
You're going to have to give me. The line is 7.5.
Okay.
All I need is four.
All I need is four
points.
You don't
points.
Want them all?
I don't want them all, because I think Dak Prescott and the Cowboys are going to play well. So all I need is plus four.
Plus four.
You set the stake.
Oh, you know what I want, what you turn me on to. I want a case of that Casa Dragones.
He gives me 4 points now.
Tequila. Come on, baby.
I'm trying to do the math on that.
A lot.
You got to bet. TJ, if you were here tomorrow, I'd bet you too. Ooh. But we on the same side. All right, we got a case of Casa Dragones riding on the James Harrison and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. Let's move to Cleveland, where Baker Mayfield took some heat this week. First for snubbing Hugh Jackson after the Browns beat the Bengals, and then for talking trash about Hugh to the media, saying his old coach was, quote, fake. Well, if you thought Baker was going to back down from his comments, think again.
People get maturity confused with me being 100% comfortable in my own skin. So that's absolutely how I am. I've always been that way. It's not immature. It's me being exactly who I am every day, being that same guy for our team, and I think that's very important for us right now.
Why did you call him fake?
I don't know. There's just, like I said, there's things that happen inside the building that there's no reason to get into detail with it. We've moved on. We have our coach right now. We have our play caller, and we're having success, so we need to focus on that.
You know, I think some people think Baker's being immature here. I'm to the point where I just think this is just who this dude is. You know, he grabbed his crotch in college. He planted the flag. He just wears it on his sleeve. He's almost like Deion Sanders playing quarterback.
Yeah.
And we're just not used to seeing it from the quarterback position. Is it immature? I don't know. Is it cocky? Yes. Baker Mayfield is cocky. And he doesn't bite his tongue. But football will humble you at some point, but and he probably will get humble, but who knows? He may just reinvent what we think of what a quarterback can do personality-wise.
Yeah, his personality doesn't fit the position, and that's what the rub is here. He's not immature. He's just out of position by what's coming out of his mouth. We let receivers be diva and say, oh, that's them. Mm-hmm. We let the linebacker be crazy or stoic. And, yeah, all right, that's who they are. Did I look at you and say,
Yeah.
All right, whatever you want to do. Yeah, by position, we let you be a crazed dog, D-tackle. You know, uh-huh. We let you do all that. But when you're the quarterback, we try to look at you and say, you can have game, but no gab. And if you are, what are you, Joe Namath? We've seen moments where it's a Cam Newton. It's moments where early Colin Kaepernick kissing biceps and wearing hats backwards. The game first and stick to the game. So then you get a Tom Brady. You get these guys up there scripted at the podium. I respect the guy who's like, I am busting out of that shell. I am coming out of that shell and showing you me in this position. I love it. He's so authentic because he's like, look, Mike, I can manage both. His quote was, I can manage both. I understand what I'm saying, but I also understand I could play this game. And you're not going to scare me to go back into this shell, even if I'm playing the leader of this team.
I feel like I said, I don't think it's immature. I think he's just being honest about his opinion of how he feels about someone. Me knowing Hugh personally, I feel like that's way out of place. I've never had a situation where I felt like Hugh Jackson was fake. So he may have got, like TJ said earlier, some misinformation from another source, and he's going along with that, and that's why he believes he may be fake. Because to be fake, that means I'm telling you something while you know or believe that I'm saying something else somewhere over here. So. Like I said, that's just how he feels. That's his opinion. I have strong opinions on, different coaches too. But for me to come out and just, be like, hey, I believe this guy is fake, I don't feel like it would be, like, right to do it. But I'm not going to put my business in the streets like that. But
before you respond, TJ, and I know TJ and Hugh are friends, I think Baker may be saying, Hugh Jackson has said, hey, I'm a Baker Mayfield supporter. I agreed with him as the first round pick. And Baker may be saying, no, you didn't. You wanted Tyrod Taylor to be the starting quarterback here. Mm. You didn't really believe in me. The things you're saying publicly aren't backed up by your actions.
And that's fine. But it should have never gotten back to Baker Mayfield. In this coaching profession, you want coaches that know what they're doing, but you want coaches that are loyal to you. And Hugh had a bunch of snakes on his staff. Mm. Because in this meeting, he could have said whatever he wanted to say about Baker. It should have never gotten back to him. And they're watching this, and they know they snakes in the grass because they went behind Hugh's back, probably when Hugh was there, and told Baker X, Y, and Z, and it turned him against Hugh. And so when Hugh was on the verge of being fired, Baker was like, get up out of here. I don't want you here anyway. Because you got coaches on the staff that wanted to be in Hugh's position, and they weren't. So they were trying to tarnish the relationship that Hugh had with Baker. I don't know this to be the case because I haven't spoken with you about this. That's just my, when you call somebody fake, and to get to the question, is he immature? No, he's not. We're just not used to quarterbacks talking like this. They don't act like this. Tom Brady doesn't do this. Drew Brees doesn't do this. They're the best two quarterbacks. They don't act like this. So when a quarterback does act like this, it's like he's just speaking his mind. But what he has to understand is, you better continue to play well, because as soon as you play bad, you're going to get talked about, and you're going to get talked about. If I went against Baker Mayfield, and I actually like him as a player, I like the attitude, but I would hit his ass late as much as I could just because I want to get him out of his game, because it's going to frustrate him because he wears his emotion on his sleeve. Can I get him out of his game? Can I hit him late? Can I trash talk him to make him start playing out of his element? Because when you act like this, that's going to happen when you play a passionate sport. You can get him out of his game.
Yeah, man, I loved your take on Hugh and Baker's relationship and what you think – really fueled the word fake.
Dude, it has to.
No, I read something different, which I respect yours as much as mine, probably more. But I read that Baker, you're a different person when you have a job versus you're out there trying to get a job. Mm-hmm. So Baker Mayfield has been spending months with this guy and hearing, okay, he didn't really want to draft me or he didn't really want to start me, but it's okay, we're working together. And then you go on your reputation tour, Hugh Jackson, and all of a sudden, everything we discuss candidly and even in our family business, you have a different pitch because now you're trying to get a different reaction. You're trying to get a different outcome. So now I'm starting to take my own mental notes like, that's what happened? That's how you feel? That's not what I heard? That's not what you told me. And when Hugh Jackson came on here, and we kept pressing him, and I kept looking at Hugh Jackson, and the South Centralness in me just was like, I wanted to go not fake, but I was like, this ain't authentic. Like, but I understood. I stayed back. I was a professional because I was like, this man trying to get a job. I'm not going to go all the way in to get so thorough that all of a sudden he exposes himself and doesn't get that next opportunity. But I'm not Baker Mayfield.
I was under impression from when we were here that Hugh had no say-so in offense. That was all Todd Haley. Can I help the offense? Can you help the offense? I'm going to help the it was – That was Todd Haley's offense. Mm. Hugh had no say-so in the offense. That was all Todd Haley. So, if anything, Baker Mayfield, be mad at Todd. Nobody has talked about this on TV. When Todd Haley got fired, he said, I was surprised because I thought I would be the interim coach. Nobody talked about that. That makes me go, you thought you would be the interim coach? You the snake.
TJ, I think you're right.
And that's just speculation on my part.
I get it. I think you're right. But I'll say this about Hugh versus Baker. Baker Mayfield has to understand, because he seems to be upset that Hugh immediately went to the Bengals. And that's part of the thing he thinks. You've been in our locker room. How are you going to go to one of our rivals? We play twice a year. And that's where I think Baker has kind of messed up. Because I'm like, well, hold on, man. Hugh got a family.
Mm. Was that a cover-up, though?
Thank you.
Well, that was a cover-up.
Don't read into that anything. That was just for the fans.
That was deflecting.
Yes.
The real thing was there were things that happened inside the building that I'm not going to get into. Going to the Bengals, he was just deflecting.
Yep.
He was trying to throw people
off.
That was
easy.
That's all that was.
He knew that was the only way that people were going to digest that.
Yeah, hey, I'm with TJ now. Now I'm thinking, like, yeah, he wanted to flash it off to this, but then he says there's things in the building that happened. Why can't you tell me what the things are in the building that happened? Because maybe somebody else.
His quarterback coach is Ken Zampezi that Hugh brought. He ain't gonna be disloyal to Hugh. I'm just saying. I haven't talked to Hugh about this. Mm. I don't know this. I like Baker Mayfield. I hope he does well because he has a chip on his shoulder. But if I'm a defensive player, I'm hitting him late at least two or three times a game.
Expose that emotion, huh?
Yeah, start playing crazy. It's going to give us a game.
James Harrison.
You're going to get fined. James is the king of that. You're going to get fined.